Hi, I'm Keegan, and this is A Bunch of Gamers. This is our 154th episode of Werewolf the Apocalypse 20th Anniversary Edition, The Hardliners. I'm going to go around and have my players introduce themselves.
I'm Tyler, and I play Kyle, also known as Guards of the Low. He's a Philodox of the Children of Gaia.
Hi, I'm Sam. I play Cora. She's an Aruna in the Get of Fenris.
Hi, I'm Adam. I play Mark Guides the Fallen, and he's a Thurge of the Children of Gaia.
Hi, I'm Sean. I play Zeb, Speaks in Sweet Whispers. He is a Thurge of the Silent Striders.
Hi, my name is George. I am playing William Groves Matrices. He is a rune of the Glasswalkers.
And additional announcement, due to work, Thomas/Dimitri will not be joining us for the foreseeable future. So just imagine Dimitri in the background doing whatever until Thomas's work schedule can clear up, hopefully. So, we miss him already. Last time, the Pax went to Electric Peak to discuss things with the Shadow Lords and start to get a perspective of the Garu who don't agree with them. Meeting with the Sept Elder and Judge of Doom, Howls of Fear, the Pax had a back and forth on the nature of the child, specifically that some of the Protectors believe that the child, regardless of intention, is destined to fall. And that they believe that it might be a kindness to end the child before it has the chance to understand what its corruption truly means and have to deal with the fact that its fate is inescapable if it is allowed to live. The Pax, pushing back, spoke of fate being malleable and able to be changed. The back and forth happened, and while a consensus was not reached, Howls of Fear admitted that he would think on what the Pax said, especially since they were brave enough to seek him out and speak to him directly and candidly. The Pax were allowed to stay the night, and now a fresh morning dawns on them. You awaken on a brisk February day. The snow has fallen. There's fresh snow on all of you as well and covering the Sept grounds. You have a few moments, likely before the gatekeeper opens the moon bridge for you all. What would you like to do?
Where are we going to try to go to? Or I guess, where can we go that gets us east? Because I don't want to talk to Halls of Fear, but I guess, where are we trying to go first?
So you do know that there is a moon bridge connection down into Texas. It's the same Sept that you heard about that the Margrave was originally at, though whether he's still there or not is an open question. The other one is the Sept of the Moon's Blessing, which is all the way in Kentucky. It is an open tribal cairn with a couple of Garu from various tribes located in the Cumberland Falls State Resort Park in southern Kentucky. So that would get you significantly closer to the Hidden Glade located in Boston.
So either we can go try and go talk to the head honcho, Margrave, if he's still there, and try and take care of some Carson business. Or we can go to Kentucky to a Sept that has a variety of tribes and try and do some politicking in that, like, for us, rather than for getting Carson caught.
I think that there's something to going to the cairn in Kentucky, telling Howls of Fear, like warning him here, and going to Kentucky to see, again, what tribes might be there at the moment could be good. And then onward, unless anyone's kind of passionate about going to Texas.
Yeah.
The only argument I see in favor of Texas is that if he were there, the Margrave, he is, for one, a great person for us to try and convince. Two, telling him about Carson would probably be the most direct method, but it would be all risk. If he's not there and he didn't go there, then we've just gone to a Sept that is closer, but not a lot closer, and one that already mostly believes that the child should be spared. So yeah, it seems probably not worth the risk to me.
I'm for Kentucky.
Same here.
Kentucky it is.
All right. Well, we can go find Howls of Fear.
You do find Howls of Fear. He is with several of his pack mates feeding on a freshly killed deer, feasting in lupus as he turns, licks his chops, and looks at you expectantly.
There's something else, a warning I'd like to give to you. It has nothing to do with the child, everything to do with the security of one of our cairns. Carson faces the storm, whom you presided over his execution, has returned. The reports that you will hear, we have told the Silverfangs, we have informed Shadow Dagger, members of Grandfather Thunder's tribe and of the Silverfangs went to Sacred Stone to investigate this. If you ask, they will tell you everything checks out. I am telling you that is not true. He has wielded a power to disguise himself, Carson, disguise himself as a Shadow Lord Elder, Philodox, and the Namer that we know continues to wield power over him. We have verified this with one of Guards the Low's abilities, his gifts. I verified it with mine own. When we went to confront him, I was afflicted with some sort of compulsion that caused me to walk from Colorado to Washington State. I was unable to act in any other way other than to keep the packs on the move. He told me before I began the walk that he was Carson, that he was back. We have spoken to another Namer about the good doctor. They said that this entity has been incredibly dangerous for more than 20 years, is very likely the most powerful of their kind on the planet. And I know that that entity is manipulating other Guru, whether they know it or not. But no one is going to believe me now that Elders and Adrian have gone to verify it. You need to know, because this could cause the fall of that sept if they act. Everyone will tell you that it's a lie and it's fine, but I tell you regardless, out of the utmost respect for what you do.
I have heard, though there is multiple elders. I am one. I do not have power to override multiple elders. They truly believe.
Then I tell you, Judge of Doom, that when we pay the consequences, it may be you that saves us.
Howls of Fear nods.
Zeb will nod and depart.
All right. With that, you go to the gatekeeper, which is Raven's Laughter. The Ragabosh looks at you quizzically. You wish to leave, then? I have been told that no talents must be paid.
Yes, it's time for us to head out, to continue speaking to other elders and other cairns. We would greatly appreciate a moonbridge to Kentucky.
Very well. I will open the moonbridge, but first we must pass through the barbed fences between us and Gaia's realm. Then I can open the bridge.
Of course. Thank you.
As you step through the heart of the cairn, take one lethal damage, and the howl is given as you see the great Thunderbird spirit arrive, as you see the clouds and lightning forming off of its great wings, as lightning shoots from the earth and expands into a moon bridge.
I guess we should be on our way then.
Onward and upward.
As you shoot off into the heavens, it feels a little odd these days. Though, with the moon bridge, the rush of running usually strikes you. There's an odd kind of breeze upon the moon bridge. It's not unpleasant, but it does feel off, so to speak, as you finally land in Kentucky. You are greeted by a black fury named Electra Day Greeter.
Day Greeter, I am speaking Sweet Whispers, Alpha of the El Omens, and our sister pack, Famori's Bane, led by Guards the Low.
Welcome to the Sept of Moon's Blessing. I am Electra Day Greeter, Philodox of the Black Furies. What brings you here? Though I'm guessing it is because your trial is soon. Word has reached even this Karen here of the trial of the ill omens and Fomori's Bane.
We're here to speak with other tribes and other groups to just get a pulse of things and garner what support we can.
Well, that makes sense. Your life is on the line.
Not just our lives, but the child's life as well.
Of course, of course.
Our lives are always on the line. It's our nature.
So it is. Well, if you wish to speak to a friendly face, there is Haiti Thunderwife. She is of your tribe, guards the low and guides the fallen.
We would speak to elders in Athro of friendly or non-friendly.
She is elder, so that would be in your best interest.
Are there any others we could speak to here with similar rank?
I know that there is an Athro Fianna by the name of Colin Moonrunner, Galliard.
And thank you very much for all your help, Daygreeter. Could you point us in, well, either direction?
Of course. The elder is closer to the northern section of the Karen that way, she points. The Fianna is typically seen hanging with the kinfolk about 10 miles to the east. Josiah Windford is also an Athro. He is a Silver Fang and our warder. He is usually on the Karen grounds, though. Where exactly is anyone's best guess. If you call for him by name, he may come to speak to you.
All right, out of character, who wants to take who?
I could talk to the Child of Gaia, Elder.
I can try the Fianna.
We can split up by pack. So if Fomori's Bane wants to speak with the Child of Gaia, the Elements will go and speak with the Fianna. And what it'll help to do is also kind of give us an idea of what we might be in for when we head to Boston, George, just as far as us talking to this person. So it might not be a lot of convincing, but it might be a whole lot of getting a taste of how adversarial or not it might be. Again, even the most hardened hasn't just been rude, but we might find out something pretty rough. So it'll be good for us to kind of get an idea of what we're dealing with, even if this particular dude doesn't get convinced of anything.
Okay.
Does that work for everyone?
I think that's the best plan, yeah.
Yeah, we'll probably also try to do Josiah as well, since the warder is likely on premises. Same with Thunderwife.
Alright, so we'll start with Thunderwife then. You do find her. She is a large, heavy-set woman, shoulders sticking out under her shirt in overalls and a plaid shirt underneath. She's got a thick mat of dark auburn hair as she's planting some trees and things like that within the premises of the Karen. As she kind of stands up, creaks as she turns, she's got a couple gray streaks now and is sun-kissed. And she goes, well, 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 howdy. What can I do for y'all?
Greetings, Elder. We are Fomori's Bane and have come to speak with you about the child and us, frankly.
All right, well, let's hear y'all's case then. She kind of moves over and sits on the ground. Oh, I hope you don't mind. My dog's barking.
What's your opinion on our stance and the child?
I don't know what your all stance exactly on the child is. I'm guessing y'all want it alive, which, you know, very well. I think that's probably for the best. I don't think anything's born evil, necessarily, unless it's a spirit. Though, I do know that there are some families of Fomori that do test the limits of that theory.
Well, our stance is that the child should live and be given its chance, just like any other Krynosporn in the nation.
True enough, but you do have to admit that that child ain't no typical Krynosporn. It ain't gonna just live. I think that's a bad way to go about it, hon.
All signs do point that this is certainly a special child. All the prophetic boxes have been checked, certainly. And yes, Garu prophecy never really ends well for the Garu. But to rest all this blame for all of that on this child is unfair.
Okay, she kind of steps up, she gets up, she cracks her knuckles. Oh, honey. She puts her arm around you and starts doing one of the, like, noogies in your head going, like, real hard. And she's got, like, the hands of, like, a mountaineer, like, levels of tendons. As she razzles your hair and kind of pushes you back going, you're going about it all wrong. Don't start with the doom and gloom. How the hell you think anyone's gonna think that you know nothing? Or at least that you ain't gonna drive them away with, yeah, all our prophecies are bad. Now, listen here, hun, you gotta think. Now, you may not know, this might not be that most commonest in knowledge, but I've been able to have some time with plenty of Lupus Barn, is that I know that the Red Talons, back around, Middle Ages, had created a prophecy for each of the tribes. And most of the tribes blew it off, but they did say that if the tribes followed these prophecies, they might be able to win the apocalypse. Many tribes, unfortunately, including ours, blew off the Red Talons. The only ones who didn't were the Warders of Man, and that's because their prophecy happened right away. And Constantinople fell and threw a big old spanner in all of their plans. And that's when everyone thought maybe them old angry wolves had something to say, something important. So what you can say is that the prophecies point to intervening with the child. And that's what y'all doing, right?
Well, yes.
Right. Now that's how you gotta say it. Not, well, the prophecy says this little here whippersnapper gonna kill you all, but we think that's a bunch of hogwash. Know your audience, son. Most of the other tribes aren't as open-minded as ours. No offense, lovely. She gives like a little nod to Cora.
None taken.
I just feel very out of my element talking like this with elders and such. It's...
You best find your element, son, because I ain't going to be the only one there. And unfortunately, most of us ain't going to be able to stand in front of the firing squad. So you guess your head on straight, or you're going to find out real quick what it feels like to be chewed on by Rorg.
And that's certainly ominous advice I need to take. Thank you, Elder. Kind of seems I learned more about me, what I need to do, than what your vote is.
Well, I'm rooting for you, hon, rooting for all of you, but quite frankly, if that's the tactic you're going to take, you got an uphill battle with a 50-pound cart and broken wheels.
I think I catch your drift, Elder, and he'll give a little bow.
All right, so after a 10-mile hike in a couple of hours, you guys do find the Fianna you're looking for, as he's having a bit of a drink, he's laughing with a few kin at a dive bar that's clearly just a front for kinfolk and Garu.
All right, I'll walk up and approach him.
Okay.
Zeb.
How you do? Nice to meet you, Zeb.
Came by for truths and lies, and I hear you might be one that's a good one for him.
Truths or lies. All right. A bite.
I'm guessing you already know who I am, or at least heard about what's been going on.
I heard about what's going on, and if you're approaching me, that means that I have a good idea who you are, Mr. Zeb. Can we get a back room?
I reckon we might. This is my mate here, William. Yep.
I'll go ahead and nod my head.
Want to get around, William, before we head back?
Yeah. I'll go ahead and grab a round.
A round is appreciated. Come on. All right. So... what's it about?
Well, didn't mean to pull you away, but appreciate the talk. We're heading out to Boston soon. A lot of this is about the Krenos-born child, us here intervening with fate.
Gives a big old eye roll.
Hey, folks got opinions on that. It's worthy enough to give you at least the story firsthand. And whatever happens to us in the aftermath, you've at least heard parts of it to go.
However you want to justify a mule born from mules.
Zeb will give the Cliff's notes, as he has before, who they talked to and where they've been. Hey, look, I'm not going to shift that feeling in your heart, and I'm not going to discount the fact that this is some high-risk shit, and we're talking about the end. I've seen other folks intervene on the point of fate before, but I would suppose that when we get out that way, out to Boston, and talk to more of the folks from your tribe, this conversation will very likely go the same way.
You are going to have a tough time. Some of them are bigger hardliners than me. I actually have to deal with mules on my time here. A lot of tribes with loose morals and looser acceptance criteria.
Let me ask you this. Why is it that you hold these views against the Krynosporn?
First law of litany. The Garu shall not mate with the Garu. It's clear as day. And if you have two who understand the curse of that existence deciding to make another one of them slither into this world, then they weren't that good a Garu to begin with.
So then why would you punish the child for something that they had no choice in?
Because that was the law. The fact is that we're this... We have fallen as a nation. Now we're just trying to not let the worm win. We used to do things right. When a Krynosporn was slithering out of the womb, we killed it and its parents to make sure. We didn't need that sort of corruption in the nation. And now we let it slide by because we need warriors for Gaia. Everyone's trying to hold out against the worm rather than do what's right to ensure our victory.
You know, I heard something similar just recently, that it was the Krynosporn that allowed corruption to enter into us, wasn't it? That their existence, like you just put so eloquently, causes that weakness to spread. I have chosen, and I'm going to be judged for it, so is my guy here, that this was the final challenge laid out before us to see if there's a little bit of change that could occur. Just learn just a little bit, enough to show that maybe we're a little bit better than that. But again, I don't want to play to lose. I sure as fuck don't want the worm to win.
Look, most of the galliards of other tribes stopped telling the stories because it was inconvenient. But there are songs. Songs about how the mules were put in places of defense and whole cairns fell. And it fell, even if that little mule in their deepest heart of hearts loved Gaia. You know why?
Because they were still corrupt and weak?
No. Part of that's true, but that's not the real reason. There's plenty of corrupt and weak Hamids and Lupus born. No, it fell because they have nothing to fight for. They don't have any connection outside of the cause. They don't have any kinfolk to call their own. All they have is warriors around them, and they're so used to loss that when everything crumbles around them, death seems just fine. They don't have anything to live for. And sept after sept after sept through our sordid history of failures, keep forgetting that fact, because they give a thing that the mules lack, love for something other than themselves.
Well, it's good to know what we're in for. And I appreciate the knowledge. Anytime.
Anytime.
How do you think this is going to end?
Going to end with a dead kid. But, and honestly, you seem nice and all, but it's probably going to end with a dead you. Can't talk to everyone to show them that you decent folks who fucked up.
Hey, sometimes you die to be a warning to others, right?
That's right.
Well, Khan, you take care, and I appreciate your time and the beer.
Much obliged. All right. With that, you now, we go back to the Sept as Josiah, you finally wander across Josiah Winford, who is in his Hamid form. He's got binoculars on, medium height, white, though definitely has a bit of a tan. His hair has a silver sheen to it, despite not being particularly old of his tribe, as he looks over at you all. Newcomers. Hey, get down. Slow. Keeping an eye on campers so they don't get too close to... Campers and hikers so they don't get too close to the cairn. Puts up the binoculars and looks around. Looks like they're avoiding the place. good. Middle of winter, but it's pretty warm today, so was worried more would be out. How can I help you? Josiah, warder of the Cairn.
It's an honor to meet you, Josiah. I'm Kyle, guards the low.
As you see his face kind of wince and his forehead kind of crinkles a bit.
And that's why we're here.
You know how to start a conversation. All right. Over here, there's a bench.
Thank you.
I'll prefer to stand if you don't mind.
Of course.
All right.
I appreciate the seat.
Sure. All right, what brings you all out here? Then I'm guessing you want to talk to me, but talk to me about what? What's the pitch, so to speak?
Well, there's not much of a pitch, at least not yet. The first thing is always just figuring out who we're talking to, because, well, we need to know what you know and what you think about what you know before we can say anything else.
Well, I heard stories that the parents of that child killed several protectors of Gaia, that the child was born under the eye of the worm, and that you guys took it and ran across country and then disappeared, and then finally came back, and that a concordant was called to deal with you all. I've also heard various things coming from several Galliards, traveling packs and things like that, talking about how your judgment has always seemed to be skewed. I'd heard that you all were let things slip that almost caused a great falling of a Cairn out in Colorado. I'd heard other stories about how in your early years, something about leading Hamids close to the Sept and that they were tied to some sort of worm company. I've heard many a story of that kind of nature. Stories that seem to imply that despite however you got to the rank you are, that you have impaired judgment. And that some of you had been banished from your Cairn twice.
Well, that is a lot, and a lot to cover. Everything you've heard regarding the child, everything about this incident, is true. At least true enough. Do you want to get into the historical stuff? I can.
I mean, if I've been led astray, I'd like to know that your judgment is better than what others have said, because if you're advocating for the child and all those facts prove true, then I'm sorry, that child needs to go.
No, I understand. Okay. Kyle will give a rundown on basically when they were Kleoth, what happened with, well, the incident with Sacred Stone, detailing basically everything about it, like into the details of, like, yes, we had this many people come forth, the Elder was kicked out permanently, like every piece of it, in Karna of Truth, just facting it at him.
Okay.
Including the less than nice things.
He goes, the inclusion of the shadowed parts certainly makes me more inclined to listen to you, especially since, no offense, you're all a pack of bears, and as we know, bear is not widely regarded as honorable among the people.
Oh, I'm well aware. It's
all right.
The reason I include everything is because, yes, I do want you to trust what I'm going to say, because I believe firmly that it shouldn't require shadows and misdirection for this child to live. I believe that that can be achieved with only the truth.
And that is appreciated, so that may be, but I do have reservations, to say the least. We've got this child who has been born under a worm sign, that the Incarna are not forthcoming on its fate, despite the fact that its fate is very much there. And that, well, that it sounds almost like to me you're protecting this kid for your friends, and that might be clouding your judgment.
Now that's an interesting and fair point. And I'll admit, I'm probably more emotional than I would have been otherwise. But I've spent months with this kid now. I want the kid to live outside of that, and this wouldn't be the first kid touched by prophecy that we've sought out to save. Hopefully not the last, I suppose, too. But where we go, we, the Garu, fate always calls. And fate is calling for this child. And it's true that we don't know where that fate lies yet. But it's also true that fate is easily influenced. And yes, if we pay no mind to this child, let it just be, something terrible could happen. But if we actually put the effort in, as we should with all of our children, we can raise a strong warrior for Gaia.
That could be. That could be. There is also the problem of one particular prophecy associated with the child, and I'm sure you have guessed which one I'm going to speak of, as it does seem to be on the minds of many of the the warborn of your tribe, and that is the prophecy of the Desperate One, that he will violate all the laws of Litany and be victorious in the apocalypse.
Yes, well, another prophecy, well, undecided, I suppose. Just vague enough.
It's vague. Let us refresh ourselves, shall we? The Garu shall not mate with the Garu. Combat the worm wherever it dwells, whenever it breeds. Respect the territory of another. Accept the honorable surrender. Submission to those of higher station. The first share of the kill for the greatest in station. You shall not eat the flesh of humans. Respect those beneath ye, all are of Gaia. The veil shall not be lifted. Do not suffer thy people to tend to thy sickness. The leader may be challenged at any time during peace. The leader may not be challenged during wartime. You shall take no action that causes a Karen to be violated. These 13 laws, if he violates all of them, are not just a minor inconvenience or a slight on polite society. Allowing a Karen to be violated, destroying the chain of command in the middle of a battle, letting a weak leader stand, becoming sick and letting the people tend to them, and keeping resources from the war, not combating the worm wherever it dwells and whenever it lives, violating another's territory, refusing an honorable surrender, taking what is not rightfully its by its station, not respecting any beneath it for they are of Gaia, eating the flesh of humans, and more importantly, lifting the veil. Does that sound like a Gaian hero? So either this child is not the Desperate One, despite what many children of Gaia Warborn are saying, and that creature has yet to be born, or that child will be doing all of those things.
It certainly is a long list, isn't it? I'm not sure if this child is the Desperate One. I tend to think not, because I tend to agree with what you've said. I, as a Philodox, obviously believe in all of our litany, and strive to follow it as closely as possible. As, well, all Garu should. But I will also say, as a Philodox, there are many pieces of the litany that many Garu disregard when it is inconvenient for them, particularly the respect for those lower than you. That is the easiest one that Garu find to violate, and one often not punished. Still, I don't particularly believe that the warborn of my tribe are correct and that this is the Desperate One. Though I also, and I'm curious why you say that the Desperate One, if it is not this child, has not yet been born.
I misspoke. I meant not been revealed.
Ah, I see. Yes, because, to my mind, if the Desperate One prophecy is one of a great enemy of the Garu, well, there are probably many spirals who already fit.
That is true, though the spirals, to their, I don't want to call it credit, to their survival, have made sure that the veil has never been lifted, because their survival relies on that too.
That's true for now. I think we come closer and closer to the day when it no longer does, because they expect to die in the apocalypse.
And that is true, huh? But yes, I, if you have not guessed, am somewhat undecided. Partially because I know Albrecht and his northern protectorate are in favor of keeping the child and you alive. And the Margrave is inclined to make sure that the Gaian King has egg on his face, as well as, I think, a sincere conviction. The Margrave has worked with Silver Fangs when absolutely necessary if he believes that what the Silver Fangs are doing is important and for Gaia. I will say that the Margrave at least has some honor for a Shadow Lord.
We have yet to meet him, though the way things are going, I imagine it's inevitable. I can hardly imagine the Margrave skipping the Concordant after all.
Came all the way from Europe to see it through.
And I understand your indecision. I do. Have you heard about the return of the White Howlers?
I've heard rumor, something about a child coming out of Avalon.
And that's, I suppose, about what I expected you'd say. It's still new, fresh. We guided that child on his journey. Watched him restore the ancestral lands of the White Howlers, or, I suppose, create a new one. We watched the contract with the Black Spirals that the Unseelie Court held be dissolved and a new one be formed to the new White Howlers. Fate is a funny thing, and had we not sought him out, that child easily could have been of the Worm. But instead there is a tribe restored, the Spirals weaker permanently, in a tangible way. I want us to have all of the means, the methods, the weapons at our disposal. I don't know exactly what this child could bring, but I want that child to have that same shot, that same calling of fate that Matthias did.
I can understand that. It's possible. Though, I don't mean to be rude or poke holes in your hope. Gaia knows we all need it. How do you know that Matthias isn't the answer to this child? Two sides of the same coin. One born to restore the Spiral, or restore the White Howlers, and another one to become a new champion of the Spiral.
When we raise a Garu, we teach it to fear and hate the corruption, the Worm. Just enough fear, of course. We don't know what will happen to any Garu that we raise, war-born or otherwise. I do not know what side of the coin this child will end up being on, because I can't know. Just the same as I cannot say that in 2 days I will not be taken into some hive and made to walk the dance the spiral, gone completely mad and insane. I cannot make these promises. What I can say is that it is up to us, all of us, to make sure that this child understands what Gaia is, what the Worm is, and to give it the strength to fight.
A good answer. I'll think on it.
Thank you. That's all we ask.
It's about 3 or 4 in the afternoon now, as you all finally are able to reconvene.
I'll assume you three had a much better time than the dynamic duo here. That Fianna Sept is going to be a tough nut to crack. I don't think we're going to run into too many friends in Boston. If anything, it might be enough to make sure that our conviction is strong and we're ready to parry the doubt that might be thrown our way. If who we talked to, Colin, was a moderate among his tribe, it'll be a rough time, friends.
Josiah was cooperative, I suppose, at the end. He's willing to consider everything we've said, but I think it could go either way.
I think this is the travel to Boston is going to be what Stephen had warned us about, and others had a good bit ago, of just swallowing your pride and being ready for some pretty hostile folks to tear away a lot of the things that we stand for. And it might be like how it started with Howls of Fear, that we at least had the honor to show up in person, but we might not be changing too many minds. Good on you for at least getting the warder here to consider. Thinking's better than nothing.
Elder Thunderwife is clearly on our side. I just got more of a lesson in. Well, something that should help me in Boston, definitely.
Well, I hope, man. I don't know what sweet words we're going to say to these storytellers of storytellers that are the Fianna. I mean, these are the mightiest galliards that the Gru Nation has ever produced or of their tribe. They are very good at what they do.
Well, if we're here to intervene for fate and intervene prophecy, maybe we need to start intervening in their stories. A grand entrance, if you will. Not so grand. Not a literary literal sense, but maybe just considering that's all we're asking, that could be the grandest we get.
Yeah, barring a miracle, I think that's going to be about it. They might not even ask us to stay for dinner, but hey, it shows conviction to talk to people that definitely don't like you or what you stand for. And some of them say some pretty heinous stuff, so just say everyone kind of steel yourselves.
That's the best we can do, I guess.
If we travel there from here, and I don't know that we have the talents to even pay for a moon bridge, but if we travel here from there, just given the relative conservative nature, I don't think we, one, bust into their territory unannounced for sure, not that we ever have, but two, that it might be a matter of us kind of sleeping overnight somewhere not too close and showing up after sunrise in the morning to their cairn, properly announced and introduced, being we're getting to the evening hours here. I don't know what you all think.
I will tell you, running straight in Lupus form, it'll take about 7 days to get to Hidden Blade.
What's today?
It is February 18th, and it's the tail end of the day, because you guys have been walking everywhere to find these people you're talking to.
And out of character question, at some point we're going to have to go and pick up the child, right? Mm-hmm. So we're going to need to set out time for that.
Yeah. I'm sorry, what day did you say it was in February again, Keegan?
18th. I said the 18th.
And the Concordat's in April.
Mm-hmm. The 17th of April.
Okay. With special Zeb speed, that shouldn't be an issue.
Well, I mean, it is 5 gnosis every time, basically.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Actually, yeah.
So that's why you gotta pick your battles. So 7 days is not terrible, but if you gotta go cross-country, then it makes more sense.
Yeah.
Keep that in the pocket for that, pretty much.
I mean, George had a bang on, right? We have about almost 60 days exactly. So, all right, so minus 7. We're inside of, you know.
Okay.
Let's go and do it. It's going to probably be a bad time. And then from there, we figure out where to go next.
I can agree to it with this, yeah.
7 days. You guys arrive in Boston fairly early, actually. It's about 9 a.m. And at the edge of the city, you, of course, shift into Hamid and take a couple more, an extra hour to get within the city limits. You remember where the Sept is and use probably a local payphone just to be safe to call as William, because you weren't, you know, you still don't have your SIM card back in your cell phone given the panic of Appleton calling you back.
Okay.
So, you call. They give you a location that is not within the Cairn proper to meet them, which is, of course, incredibly encouraging. As you finally arrive, you are at this kind of dreary, almost abandoned warehouse-like area, maybe 2 or 3 blocks away from the Cairn proper, as Connor Crimson Moon, Terrence Harden Judge, and Matthew Blackfang arrive. These are the highest ranking members of the Cairn, though one of the high ranking members is missing, an Athro by the name of Cursed Stag, a Krynos born of the Sept. The typical jovial look of Connor is gone, as the middle-aged Fianna kinda goes, "All right, do you want to talk to us all at once, or would you prefer to do it one-on-one to make it feel like you have a real shot?"
one-on-one sounds great. I'd love that feeling. Thank you.
We've got meeting rooms over in the corner there. We'll wait out here patiently. Can't touch you based on the rules of the Concordant being called. Nor would we want to. You've done good things to the Green, except we care deeply about. So we'll give you that. Who you want to talk to first? Do you want me? I'm the Sept Elder, Connor says.
It'd be an honor.
It absolutely would. Come on. As he takes you all into the meeting room, as you just see all these maps and things like that scattered around guns, a couple bottles of whiskey, and a few flasks with carven Garu glyphs in them. All right, here I am.
Well, obviously you know why we're here already. Do you think you could tell us, well, what you think?
And it is said, in the dawn of times, when the tribes were foolish and young, that they used another tribe, just as foolish, just as young. It is said that a unicorn, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and foolish in the ways of rage, walked off and spoke to the Pharaoh when the great wars of rage were going, and brother fought brother, sister against sister, and sibling against sibling, as the claws of the Pharaoh and the claws of the Garu clashed, thinking that they could bring peace. Walking through, they then spoke to an owl and asked them to spread the message far and wide amongst the Pharaoh, both tribes being considered honorable to the others. And so they came, and a war party descended upon the Pharaoh and tore them to shreds, discovering what he did. Foolish in his naivete, he decided to consecrate the defeat and the betrayal with violating Gaia's sacred law, finding comfort in the arms of the Silent Strider who had sent the message. And together they conceived a child that should never have been, born without hair and corrupt of heart. And so Gaia showed her displeasure, that the mark of her displeasure would be on all of them, a weakness in body and a weakness in spirit, tied together hand in hand. And that child proved the weakness of spirit, becoming the first Ronin, hunting the Garu for words of truth flung against its tender skin, unprotected by fur or conviction. And so, now you come to me, talking of another child, a child so tender and mild, as two Garu, too weak to deal with the fact they have no connections to kin and cannot sire any children of their own, fell into each other's arms and then consecrated their corruption upon some field somewhere, spreading corruption. But instead of firing blanks, this Garu instead filled the belly of a warrior who was never meant to conceive with a child who was impossible. A child so corrupt, indeed, that when it gave its first cry, the worm took notice and opened its eye within the sky.
That's a rough one, Keegan. He hit all the notes. I'm a zealot, I'm racist, and I lack compassion.
Crimson Moonria, you say that this child's cries opened the eye of the worm, got the worm's attention. What if it's not garnering favor from the worm? When, yes, we pay attention to the things that we like, the things that we think will help us, but we also pay attention to the things that scare us. We notice that when we scare our enemies, they are more apt to focus on us. What if it's because the worm knows that something is coming for it?
I doubt it. It's a mule. And here's the thing. Just because you claim, and right now the child may not show any of the typical Metis mutations upon its person, that doesn't mean it doesn't have any. It could have some in the mind, and it could have some in the spirit. And because both of its parents were corrupt, it's probably doubly so. The worm knows things and loves things that look fair and are foul to the core. And Gaia has already shown her disfavor to the mules. That's why they're sterile. That's why they have their conditions, their mutations, whether it's shattered minds, souls, or bodies. Horns and hooves of prey animals, because Gaia would rather them be feasted upon by the fangs of her warriors than allow them to live. And we've grown desperate in these times, and quite frankly, I would have preferred to have been born a few hundred years ago so that I didn't have to stomach them. But here we are, and we do our best to make sure that our mules are strong enough to hold against the worm as, well, as limited as they are.
Elder, you make mention of Gaia being so displeased with these Krynosborn. When we went on a spirit quest, we visited the stars, we visited many incarna of the planets around us, one of whom is Ishtara, the Earth incarna of Gaia. And her words to us, I will concede that she is the most compassionate, of course. However, her words to us were to raise the child. She showed him compassion.
That's your argument? The spirit of compassion wished to show compassion to the child, who, if she said to kill the child, may have actually triggered her ban and scalded her own flesh?
If she had triggered her ban, yes, that would be terrible. However, she did not need to hold the child to say compassionate things.
No, you misunderstand me. A spirit's ban means that if she'd said anything outside of her purview, such as compassion, it would physically hurt her.
I understand.
Then you're saying she said compassionate things about the child. I'm not sure I follow.
What I'm saying is that, sure, she said compassionate things. However, she did not need to hold the child, give him comfort. She could have stood there and spoken to us and not triggered her ban. Instead, she played with the child. She, for lack of a better word, snuggled the child. She did not need to do those things, and yet she did.
She absolutely needed to do those things. As a spiritual incarna that represents motherhood and compassion, she does not act like us. She is a spirit. She's not a Garu. She's not a person. She is powerful. She deserves reverence. And her words do carry much weight. But you are trying to use her in a way that she could not possibly have said no, could not possibly have not shown compassion to the child, could not have played with it, because it is a child. And she represents motherhood and compassion, the more touchy-feely aspects of Gaia, for a lack of a better word.
Then let us move past Ishtara and then talk about Sol, or talk about Mars, the other incarna. We spoke to many of the planetary incarna, and all of them said to raise the child. Can you go against all of the incarna?
Did they all say raise the child?
They did.
They all? I think you're just trying to play things. And why wouldn't you? You're a kinslayer yourself. I've heard about the purge. You run with packs with who had a stargazer with them who did horrible things. You have a Garu in your pack who's destitute, the only survivor of a Black Spiral Dancer attack upon his sept, and he's mysteriously the only survivor. You have this Zeb speaks in sweet whispers who brings black and terrible words everywhere he goes and runs with a pack as dishonorable to tie themselves to a bear, to be banished from their own sept twice, and who constantly seem to bring woe and misfortune to everyone they love. Getting an elder who, from all accounts and all stories I've heard, was a father to them, banished from his own sect. Ones who call friends, even if these friends are supposed corrupt beasts who produced an abomination on Gaia's face, they died as well. And I'm supposed to believe you. You invoke the incarna as if they blessed you from on high. When I see you for what you are.
Say it then. What do you see us as?
Uran, the tainted ones. Little creatures who dance the weaver's webs. Little creatures who bring about woe and misfortune.
Because from where I stand, from where I sit, all I see are bigots. Ones that look from on high and do nothing about it.
I fought in this war since before you were born, boy. And I follow the litany, the ancient laws of our people. You can call me whatever you want. It's proof of your Uran status to cast away the litany simply because it's an inconvenient truth, because it hurts your feelings when you still rip out the throat of your fellow tribe mates because your tribe failed and a bunch of cockroaches became mechanical abominations of the grandmother spider. Hopefully your patron sees its mistakes and flies off and leaves you behind. Would you like me to send the next one in?
Please, Elder. Thank you for your wisdom and your time.
Thank you. Steps up, walks out. Blackfang walks in. As Matthew sits down. Ooh, he looked angry. This should be quite an interesting conversation.
We'll keep it simple enough. That cub very well has a fate tied to it that we're trying to steer right now, away from the one that would bring ruin to the Gru Nation. And there are plenty that are grasping at the fates that like to hear best, the ones that they feel have the best outcome. At this point, correct me if I'm wrong, fellows, the goal is to have the child live just for now. Let it be observed and seen. Should it fall, should it misstep, let the Gru do their solemn duty in accordance with the litany and kill it. Understanding it is Krenos born, understanding its existence right now is a very violation. But the impossible has happened. We are divided as a nation on this.
Yes, and I feel that the nation has steered itself wrong in this entire concordant.
And it will undoubtedly be important for the concordant to hear the words of the Fianna, our greatest storytellers, to know the warning.
I think I'm outside of my tribe's purview in this matter alone.
Perhaps I am confused then. Enlighten me, please.
This was a tactic too subtle, I think, for the worm. Now, to be fair, the Defiler has more subtle means, but even then, it has to use destruction. This child's birth is not destruction. This child's birth is a new kind of order. I think this child is a child of the Weaver, and that it will impose an order that will make us lose to her. I see you're all confused. Let me elaborate slightly. The Garu are children of two completely unrelated species in terms of what human scientific understanding is. Wolves and humans cannot crossbreed. Wolves and humans can't have children together, but a Hamid Garu could have a Lupus child, and vice versa. What if, and this breaks the order that the Weaver is imposing upon Gaia and reality. What if the Krynos-born child is her attempt to force a new order on the Garu, to create one species that can't shapeshift in the future? It can still now, but that the Garu will always be a new, strange Krynos species, one that can breed freely, but one that starts to lose its connection to the Umbra, one that can't switch between forms because it is now a new species. It's just another animal, one that's clearly tied to human myth, and when it's finally discovered, lifting the veil and enacting that particular part of the prophecy of the Desperate One, it is because the veil doesn't exist anymore, because they have created a species that humans will rationalize away as the basis of the werewolf myth, that the child is the Weaver born to impose order upon the Garu Nation. And because we keep fighting about whether it's of the worm or of Gaia, masks her subtle touch in this and weakens us as a nation as we're at each other's throats talking about this child and missing the point of what it is. Now, make no mistakes, I do believe it needs to be destroyed for that very reason. But that is to be determined, I'm sure. But that is what I think the child is, and I don't think it'll be the only child if other Krynos-born attempt this little miracle.
So you would say that this heralds the spiritual death of the Garu people?
Yes.
You would say that. And I, although I've never heard the point before, I believe I understand it. If there are to be other children, then this one in and of itself is not particularly special.
That is correct.
It's a shame that the only way to test it is breaking the litany.
It checks many of the boxes of the desperate one. If it is a new species, and if the child does not go through first change, or it is limited somehow in its forms like some of the other Krynos-born are, then eating the flesh of man technically wouldn't be a violation for it. It's just an animal, eating. It has no blood relations to humans like all other Garu. It violates the Karen because its very presence invites the Weaver to dance among us. It lifts the veil because it's a new animal. It is born because the Garu get mated with the Garu, and because it is no longer a warrior race, it is under no obligation to combat the worm wherever it dwells, whenever it breeds. It's an animal, so it does not have to conform to rigid social rules on combat and war.
Now, you mentioned it is an animal a few times, and that it may... I want to understand this, so I suppose it's a clarifying question. You said that it may retain the ability to shapeshift for now, but would lose it, or be limited.
Yes, just a theory, once again. What if it can only take Glavro and Hispo form, and thus is not able to breed, to lack of a better word, with any wolves or humans? And it can only have children with others of its kind, and it self-selects for more limited and limited forms. Because the Weaver is imposing her order on this new line of creatures.
And what... The loss of intelligence. When would you believe that to take place?
So, calling it an animal, I mean in that it's a new species. I don't necessarily mean that it'll have animalistic intelligence.
Ah.
But it is a new animal, as the human animal is still an animal, despite their best efforts to convince themselves otherwise.
Sure. My apologies. I took the colloquial meaning. I suppose, and I'm sorry for the slow response, but this is not one Garu we've spoken to has put forth a theory like this before. It's very interesting.
I am a questioner of the ways, and it is my job to question and make sure that we exhaust all options. The Talarium is ruled by more than just Gaia and the Worm. And Gaia has more than one enemy.
So I suppose where I might fall on this theory is that it certainly wouldn't hurt to wait, because there could be many of these children, as you put forth. That would be something that, well, as much as I love the litany, I'm not going to pretend that it is not broken often in the dark corners of Gaia. I imagine it would come forth relatively quickly that there were others.
That is true. Well, perhaps. I don't know how often the mules tend to mate amongst themselves. Usually they're watched too closely anyway by most of their septs, for not those reasons, but simply because, well, there's always a hint of doubt in most septs, even the more liberal septs of your tribe.
Of course. No, I hear that, but I believe it would still be very quick, because it would not have to be a Gaian Garu, would it?
No, it would not. That is a good point. Though, if the Spirals ever talked to us about it, I'd be shocked.
No, I imagine they won't go just telling us, but I think the signs would be fairly clear.
Now, to be fair, I do think this child, even if my theory holds true and others will arrive, is special, simply because it is the first. And the first has spiritual significance in both the Umbra and with fate.
But how do we or you know that it's the first? It could just be the first known.
Perhaps, but given all the signs, the eye opening at the time of its birth, or so I've been told by the protectors, it seems to indicate at least a little bit that the child is the first, and that makes some amount of sense. Where the Weaver goes, the Worm is compelled to follow, for the Worm is trapped in her webs, and so the Worm's eye opens to see what the Weaver has wrought for the first time.
So, you put forth the theory, and you say, yet, that the first is still special. Do you mean specifically the Desperate One prophecy, or should that be of some other Garu or other animal?
I'm not sure. I think this child could fit the Desperate One prophecy, and I simply put it out because most have associated with the child, and I wanted to use that as an avenue to convince you that my theory at least has some grounds if you're going to base it off of prophecy. I think more importantly that the first thing has spiritual significance, and that if the child were killed regardless, it would leave a spiritual imprint of a new species in the Umbra and create potentially a new spirit brood, a deceptive one, one that appears Krynos, but is actually tied to the Weaver.
So if this child were to be executed, it would mean an even deeper and permanent destruction of its spiritual essence to make sure that it couldn't strengthen the Weaver over time, yes?
Yes. That is why this is a precarious thing, why I'm more inclined to leave the child alive, but thinking that it has to be destroyed utterly at some point, which would take more effort than just the Concordant. It would take several Thurges to start looking into this.
I would, not that you care, I would submit that plan has significant merit, that we would need to be fully prepared through study, through understanding, to take action against something like that, especially as old horrors begin to make their way across the Second Veil, old monsters long bound away now appearing in, you know, inside the Umbra, and indeed, the worm stirring beneath its prison, other great worm creatures doing the same, and the Weaver strengthening itself in the domain that we used to believe. I see the spider silk. We see the web strengthening. We know the pain now, even to walk to the heart of our own cairns. I would want to be very sure and very complete, to your point, because if we didn't do it correctly and didn't do it right, you said it yourself, we're setting ourselves up for something significant and terrible.
Yes, exactly. And so with that, I will speak to our Cleoth and Fostern, because, well, every Garu gets a vote in the Concordant that goes.
Thank you for your time.
Yes, I'll send the next one in. As he gets up, and we'll see what the last Elder of the Hidden Glade has to say next time. Thank you to everyone who listened. We'll catch you in that next episode. Bye.
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 Bye-bye.